And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Blake. I'm not doing as good as Kalen DeBoer, who just got a wonderful contract extension for winning one college football playoff game. But I'm doing pretty good, Blake. How are you?
Yeah, I find the contract extension maybe a little early. But I also don't, you know, we talked about this in the offseason already. I don't understand why people think that this is completely outlandish either. Like, I don't find it to be completely outlandish, right? Like, I mean, he did just get to an SEC championship game in year two. He just did make the playoffs in year two. Does he deserve to be a top five paid head coach? I guess that is the real question that you and I are about to find out.
Yeah, before I mean, like, we really, really dig into it, I agree with you. I'm a bit conflicted because the timing of it, if this came next year, I'd probably be fully comfortable with it depending on how things go this year. But I just wonder if this is a little bit of an overcommitment, knowing how things have gone poorly for other teams who have dumped a ton of money into their coaches and given them long-term deals after just a couple of years of success. Like, he's only been there for 2 years. What's the expectation?
Well, first and foremost, nobody has more expectations than the program that he's coaching. Nobody has more expectations of a situation more than the University of Alabama. So nobody is under more pressure to win and win now more than Kalen DeBoer. With that part being said, he did almost get plucked. You know, Kalen DeBoer 2 weeks ago came out and stated, and I quote, "How can I not know about the Michigan thing? It's all over social media. I try to just take it one day at a time and push forward, and we were going into playoffs, so I didn't really think of anything else." That's not like, a denial. That's not a denial that you didn't talk to Michigan, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not a denial.
Right.
What it feels like to me is, I guess we're kind of already in it.
Right.
So I guess we'll just talk about it. So in case you did miss it, Kalen DeBoer is signing a 7-year extension. He's going to be making $12.5 million per year in that extension. What we all remember is the whole Michigan situation and that falling through and Kalen DeBoer saying that he was staying at Alabama. Joe, what this does feel like to me, however, is just a situation where they agreed to terms and then now they're just signing that contract now. Meaning they agreed to something in principle to give him $12.5 million and now they're just actually inking the deal, if that makes sense. So I think that Alabama didn't want to lose the guy who got into an SEC championship game in a year. And I also don't think they wanted to lose a guy who just made it to a playoffs and won a playoff game in year two, by the way. And I'm just always fascinated. He didn't come in and win a national title or get to a national title in year two. Like, that is an absurd. Joe, he's 10-4. That's his current, like, in the 2 years in Alabama, he's 10-4 each year. That is his record. So, I mean, on average. So if that's what he's going to do, is that the floor?
Well, we don't know that. So that's my whole conflict with this, Blake. I have said this time and time again. I think that Kalen DeBoer is a great coach. When we did our hot seat tracker video for him, not knowing that this contract extension was coming, we thought that it was ludicrous that he was considered to be on the chopping block, that some people were saying that that was a possibility. His name was featured in articles for team coaches that were on the hottest seat going into 2026. I think that that's been squashed, but it feels kind of crazy to me to give him a bump of $2 million and to extend him really deeply, 7-year extension for a guy who has won one playoff game. But the biggest issue that I have with this is the timeline. He's 2 years into his coaching career at Alabama. He has not had his own roster, like his own true roster, like culture built roster. We don't know what the version of Alabama looks like without the residual juices from Nick Saban's era. We don't. As much as I knew you were gonna have a problem with me saying something with phrasing it like that. Like, my point with this is that we don't know what DeBoer is going to do in year three and year four without the momentum of Nick Saban. Understandably, the roster did get gutted over the past couple of years, but he still had a lot of those Saban dudes, and they were still some of his most important players. Deontay Lawson, Caden Proctor, Ryan Williams, Ty Simpson, Jam Miller. Like, hell, these guys all were Saban guys. Mm-hmm. And now he has a chance to actually show what he can do in year three. I feel like year three was the prove it year and then get give him the big contract. Are you letting, just because Michigan sniffed around a little bit, are you letting that dictate your decision making? Like, what if he completely collapses and falls apart? And I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but this is long-term commitment without much certainty of what his program is going to be like in the future.
You also could turn that on its head. You could also turn it on its head and say, what if Keelan Russell is better than Ty Simpson? What if he the ending part of Nick Saban and Kalen DeBoer coming in, losing 20-plus players to the portal? I get what you're saying. He had some residuals. He also had a lot of kids that left, like Caleb Downs. And so I also look at this and say, what if Keelan Russell comes in or Austin Mack comes in and is better than Jalen Milroe, is better than Ty Simpson? The offensive line that Nick Saban recruited, Joe, it had to be completely revamped. It didn't fit the Kalen DeBoer system. So there are parts of me that wonder, why not go to Ty Simpson last year or 2 years ago over Jalen Milroe? What was the quote-unquote structure of the team and the culture of the team? I don't think Jalen Milroe did enough to what Ty Simpson – like, we saw more from Ty Simpson than we did Jalen Milroe. Yeah. So there are situations where I agree with you there. I do agree more defensively. But they got – you know, I don't want to come out here and say this, but this is what it feels like to me. It feels like that they got Jimmy Sexton.
Well, that was my thought, was that they got – he has so much control in this situation, they have no choice.
But I also throw this out there to you. It's something in a conversation that we talked about last night. Joe, you can't be scared to rip a Band-Aid off, though. You can't be scared to buy into a guy, because Courtney Morgan also got an extension, the general manager, 3 years, $1.2 million. And so – we've seen A&M, we've seen LSU, we've seen Florida, we've seen Penn State. We've seen big programs make moves and not be scared of it. Joe, I brought this to your attention. I say to your attention. I brought this to you last night. If the SEC TV revenue deal is worth $70 million, what are you doing? And you got to pay 20 of it to athletes. What are you doing with the other 50? Because is $20 million going to scholarships? Let's just say another $20 million goes to the student athletes. Well, what are you doing with $30 million? You know, I cover a team individually. Did you know in the LSU audit, football audit, they netted $69 million last year? $69 million. That is the audit from a state institution that LSU football, not the athletic department, LSU football was able to bring. So I just bring, what does Bama do? What does Ohio State do? What does their audit say? So my whole point in this is, everybody, I think, sometimes gets fixated on the money. And you're not wrong. You don't want to be in a situation where you're like Brian Kelly and you got to fire a guy for $50 million. But I don't think Kalen DeBoer did more in 2 months than what Brian Kelly did in 4 years. And so I get what you're saying, that he could have the potential where he falls flat on his face. But I saw a guy in year one go 9-4. Then I saw a guy in year two go 11-4. I saw progress with them, regardless if you want to talk about the Florida State loss or not. I mean, I just come to back to a situation where I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be fine. Now, is he going to live up to the Alabama expectations will be the ultimate question here.
Right. So I agree with the what you just put out there. I think DeBoer will be fine. My comments are not a criticism of DeBoer. I think that he's a great coach. I think out of any of the coaches that have not won a national championship, that actually might be a fun segment that we should do over the summer, ranking coaches that have not won a national championship, who's the most likely to win one next. I think that he is capable of winning one, not this year, but if Keelan Russell is as good as we expect and with the past couple of recruiting classes, that it's totally possible. But Blake, I keep coming back to the fact that we don't know what he is as a coach. He hasn't been a Power Four coach that long. He was only at Washington for a few years, and he's only been at Alabama for two. We don't know what it's going to look like when he has multiple years to build a culture. And I would argue, Blake, one of the biggest things that was a big issue for Alabama is a lot of these big-time guys that we were expecting really big leaps from stagnated. They didn't take that jump. And that's a little bit of a red flag for me for what to expect down the line. When he's embedded in there for multiple years, is his player development going to be up to par? Was the team as successful as it was because he had dudes that were recruited by Saban that were coached up 70% of the way, and then he took over and didn't progress them any further? They were just good enough to be as good as they were. Here's where I look at this and what the worst case scenario is, and this is kind of how I look at these things with coaches nowadays, because sadly, we're in a world where James Franklin and Brian Kelly, that happens now, and if you're not winning at least close to the level of expectation, like what if DeBoer is 9-3 over the next couple of years, is that a grounds for a firing? But like the worst case scenario here is that he becomes Jimbo. Jimbo goes 9-1 in 2020. And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't LSU sniffing around him? Wasn't that kind of part of the reason why, the big reason why he got the contract extension that he did? It was LSU that was considering bringing him in. Wasn't that part of it?
It was somewhat part of it, but LSU didn't make a move until after the fact.
So they used that leverage.
Yes and no. Okay. Because if you remember, the thing was, is that he went 9-1. And if you remember on that, he had the number one overall recruiting class in the country with all those five stars. So LSU hadn't made a hire or fire yet. So it's not really the LSU factor, but here's the difference with the Jimbo thing. Jimbo had one good season. Now, Jimbo won a national title in Tallahassee. The game changed. He didn't innovate, and he lost. It wasn't that Jimbo didn't have a lot of talent. Look at all the talent that's in the league now that was on that team that was recruited by him. Walter Nolan and all of those dudes. So I don't think Kalen DeBoer is cut from that cloth. I don't think he's cut from the Jimbo cloth of he's so stagnated that he won't try to change. Now, I'll throw this back out your way too. In some regards, he did inherit guys like Ryan Williams, because Ryan Williams reclassified, Saban retires, he decommits, and it's like, well, you got the number one overall wide receiver, why wouldn't I go after him? And then he goes off as a freshman. And we look at Ryan Williams as a developmental problem. Well, I think that this takes time. I think that Kurt Cignetti has ruined college football in the sense of a guy came in and in 2 years won a national title in a lot of ways to where, like, Joe, do I think he's a top? Let me just say this. Should he be paid as a top eight head coach at Alabama? Should the Alabama head coach be paid as a top eight head coach in the country? Regardless, yes. Yes. Like, I think I think that Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, and LSU, and potentially USC, those are the nine coaches that when you make moves, I don't really say anything. I'm not going to say anything. If you believe that is the guy, then do what you got to do. But when you have schools that are netting $69 million for their football program, don't cry to me about money.
Well, but I'm not looking at this, Blake. What's catching my attention is nothing to do with where he fits in the pecking order, because I think that you bring up
Ohio State was the number one team that I said. You got to stop with Ohio State thinking we hate them. Was Ohio State not the number one team that I said?
I've learned, Blake, this isn't just Alex. I've learned that our commenters know that they can get a reaction out. Some of them know they can get a reaction out of us if they say certain things about their teams. But it has nothing to do with the pecking. What are you watching? Alex says I'm watching two things at once. How do you even watch a podcast and another thing? Unless it's a game or something like that. Okay, I'm getting distracted here.
Anyway,
it has nothing to do with the pecking order. To me, it has to do with the long-term deal.
You don't like the 7 years worth of extension.
No, that is where I would have been fine if you had given him like a 3-year extension, like if you just tacked on a couple of years to his deal,
which and ironically would have given him 7 years if you want to. Which that's the ironic point.
Am I misleading? Wait, so is the deal that
4-year deal? If you're giving him 3, he would have had a 7-year deal total. To what your point is?
But is the news not that it is a 7-year extension?
It is. Makes it a 10-year contract.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm going to double check after the show, but I believe that that's what this is. That is a long time to commit to a guy who's won one playoff game. Like I think that I'm bothered by this because this isn't the situation of like with Marcus Freeman, where Marcus Freeman had multiple top recruiting classes and then proceeded to take Notre Dame to the national championship game.
Right.
But yeah. Forget his record. He took him to the national championship game. Like if Kalen DeBoer had gone in and won multiple playoff games, this is an instant. Absolutely. Why wouldn't we give him the extension? But he won one playoff game, which was an accomplishment. It's a great accomplishment. It's something to buy into. But as you said here, my biggest takeaway with this is they got their asses worked by Sexton. That's what this all is. They use the leverage of the Michigan interest, not even an offer, Michigan interest to work his ass. Or to work their asses for Sexton to pull that off. That's where I'm.
So, do you just not agree with the move?
I don't agree with giving him that many years.
Because I agree with you. I think it's a double-edged sword. I agree with you on. I don't know if I would have signed him to a 7-year extension. But yeah. I also think that he is one of the top 10 best head coaches in the country. However,
I don't disagree with that. I just think 7 years is an insane amount of time. And I wasn't bringing up Jimbo as a way of this is going to be him. Jimbo is chronicled as being a nut, as being a complete utter nut. He drove himself into the ground at Texas A&M because his own ego got in the way.
You know what you also do, though, with that 7-year extension?
What?
You stop other people from sniffing.
But has he done anything to warrant you being so panicked and afraid of like, oh my God, if we lose DeBoer, we're effed?
I don't think Cignetti's got like 10 years. Like, so stay with me here.
Okay.
So then name the other.
What do you mean name the other?
I mean, everybody could be in that situation. I mean, I understand what you're saying. But if they got to rip that Band-Aid off, the years and the money don't really matter.
Let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Would you rather in this situation?
Okay.
Would you rather pay him a ridiculously high buyout in 2 years because this doesn't go as everybody expects? And it could be as hilarious as him going 9-3 in back-to-back years that Bama administrators and alumni get upset and frustrated that they're not in the CFP. So would you rather you pay to get rid of him in 2 years for a ridiculous amount of money like they did with Jimbo, or somebody poaches him?
So I agree. Just to make it understood, I agree with the 7-year extension I don't agree with. However, I would rather, if you're asking me, I would rather, because I understand that where he's coming from in reference to, let's just talk about his last 3 years. He's gotten to a national title. He missed the playoffs in year one at a new school. And then he got to the SEC title game and got to the playoffs in year two, and he won a playoff game. I don't think that they're looking at this just from a Bama perspective. And I don't know if you can just look at this from a Bama perspective. I don't think that you can look at him and say, we're just looking at the only 2 years of his career. Because when you look at Washington last year, I think that's getting involved. However, do you know what this tells me? What? This tells me that the talks with Michigan were legit. And I don't care what anybody tells me. To drop that massive of an extension and offer means to tell me that you agreed in principle, and somehow, some way, whether they got sectioned or the conversations with Michigan were actually legit. I go back to 2 weeks ago when Kalen DeBoer went public and he said, yeah, clearly I knew about the Michigan stuff. I'm not blind to what's out there on social media. All right, let's translate coach speak for just a moment. Yes, we had conversations. Yes, Jimmy Sexton talked to him. Yes, we had deep conversations. And Alabama said, all right, enough is enough. We're putting our foot down. Do you want me to tell you how also I feel that that was confirmed? Because Lane Kiffin went to the podium and said the same thing. You know who else said the same thing? With Josh Pate a couple of days ago? James Franklin. That when conversations like this start happening and heating up, I don't think that he gets that massive of an extension without serious pressure on the Bama side. Would I have done it to your would you rather? No, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have given him a 7-year extension. I probably would have given him a 4-year extension and called it a day and let him have 7 years. That's what I would have done.
That's where I sit.
What I do disagree on from some is that there's like, he shouldn't be paid $12.5 million. Says who?
Yeah, the money thing I don't care about. I mean, the money, the money nickels and dimes at this point. These dudes are all getting paid a shitload of money. I'm sure that whoever he passed is probably like, oh, where's my, you know, how do I get back in the top 10?
Do you know who the happiest man in the country is right now?
Who?
Kirby Smart.
What does that do to his contract?
Guess who's going to be up in negotiations in 18 months?
I don't know if there's ever any fear of him leaving or...
Well, the Falcons situation constantly comes up every year. Kirby doesn't like it anymore. Kirby doesn't love it anymore. He wants out of the NIL game. Meanwhile, Georgia has completely revamped how they're doing NIL.
I actually think it's a lot more likely that DeBoer would leave for the NFL before Kirby would.
Oh, Kirby ain't leaving Athens. Kirby, and here's what also surprises me, to your point. I can't believe they caved.
This is where I'm perplexed by is that they didn't even like seemingly try to negotiate. Like what was the counter argument? What did Sexton come to the table with? Did he ask for 10 years and like $30 million?
Hold on. Let's rewind the time for just a moment before we get out of the segment. Let's rewind the time. Mm-hmm. When did the Michigan thing happen? It happened after National Signing Day, early signing day. Who was off the board? Let's say Kalen DeBoer leaves for Michigan. Okay? Kalen DeBoer picks up and goes to Michigan. Well, Lane Kiffin's off the board. James Franklin's off the board. Kurt Cignetti's off the board. I mean, Sark is off the board, relatively speaking. Who do they go get? So they have to kind of somewhat do what they did. They didn't really have a choice. So the other side of that was...
You got to hire Kyle Whittingham.
Okay. But do you get what I'm saying? I think that they agreed because they looked at the open market and said, are we going to go get Alex Golish? John Summerall was gone. Golish was actually the first shoe to drop. Who are we going to go get? Glenn Schumann? Are we going to do this process all over again? So I get what everybody's saying, but Bama's feet was to the fire. Bama's entire feet were at the fire post the Michigan thing.
I find that.
But hold on,
somewhat the time, worrying.
How is it worrying? Because it's exactly how it went down. Michigan did something shitty, as Michigan normally does. They waited until early signing day was done for the Sharon Moore thing to be out. You're in the middle of the playoff, and all of a sudden, here comes Kalen DeBoer and Michigan talk start heating up.
I'm saying that it's worrying because as much as there had to be urgency to make sure that they didn't lose him, it's a little troubling that they didn't. This is an ass whooping in a negotiation. Just plain and simple. That's how I'm reading the whole thing. This is an ass whooping. You could have extended him. You did not need to give him 7 years. 2033.
Joe, I'll be 43.
I'll be
married. How many?
That ain't happening anytime soon.
Well, in 2033, it will be.
I'll be 35. No,
yeah,
35.
Yeah, shit. You'll be. So yeah, you'll be married.
I will not be married with kids. I will not be married with kids by then.
Yes, you will.
And Kalen DeBoer will be fired. Who gets fired? What happens first? I have kids, or Kalen DeBoer gets fired?
I don't disagree with that whole situation, but I also feel like that they're in between a rock and a hard place. And I think that they agreed in principle to this because they lost out on everybody else, and they were like, "Oh my God, what do we do?" And we're talking about all of the negatives. I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be just fine. I think this whole Bama burning thing that idiots continue to push out, like he made it to an SEC title in a playoff in year two.
Yes. Yeah, I mean I agree with that. And I know it might be lost in what I'm saying here. I really continue to believe that Kalen DeBoer will establish himself in the upper echelon and win a national championship at some point in the next 10 years. I think that he's going to be able to get it done. It's not going to be the same consistency as Saban or Bear Bryant, but you're going to be back where you were. And look how close you were in just year two. That's where the promise is. That's what you're buying into. I just think that athletic departments, and you talked a little bit about spending earlier, athletic departments are really bad with their finances, and they're really bad with managing these contracts. And one freaking guy has his fingers everywhere and is capable of dominating every single – he has the leverage to handle everything. And, you know, what Sexton – we probably don't even talk about it. I'd love to know if Sexton like says to these people in these negotiations, well, if DeBoer leaves and you don't give us what we want, I'm just going to take all the guys that you might want to hire out of the discussion. He clearly has too much power. That's the thing that's crazy.
Like when this also, I also don't believe this either. It says Jimmy Sexton, the powerhouse sports agent of CAA representing top NFL talent and college coaches, has an estimated net worth of around $5 million as of 2024. I don't believe that. That's what's on Google. There's no way.
Well, I mean, he's only getting a percentage.
Forbes once pegged commissions at $31 million in 2020, and then another okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. This from AOL.com says that built off of a jaw-dropping $613 million negotiated deals, he's expected to make, about $84 million. Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. I think Governor Landry was onto something.
No, I think Governor Landry said a lot of dumb stuff. A lot of dumb stuff in the Kiffin thing. However, the one thing that he said that was 1,000% true, I would be disbarred if I were doing what Trace Armstrong did. He wasn't talking about Sexton, by the way. He was talking about Trace Armstrong because he had the offensive coordinator, he had the quarterback, he had the head coach, he had the offensive line coach, he had the wide receivers coach, he had the strength and conditioning coach all under one roof.
It's like the mob.
It is
like
the
these
mob.
Agents, they're like mob families.
Fat Tony, how they operate. I mean, Jimmy Sexton's just fat Tony Salerno. Shout out Fat Tony.
No one wants to talk about it, man.
No one wants to talk about Fat Tony. But Fat Tony ran the streets for Chance Gigante. Now, Joe, how do I know more about your New York history than you do?
I don't know. I'm not.
You need to learn your roots, John. You need to learn your roots. All right. Nevertheless, we're live. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, and to all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Every Ruffino and Joe show is brought to you by our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FT Sportsbook app today. Use your mobile device in doing so. Joe and I always suggest to go set your preferences over at FanDuel by going over to FanDuel.com/RG for more details. Joe, let's stay in the great state of Alabama, but let's go a little bit north, more towards the Georgia line here. We talked about the Auburn Tigers last night because of Ashton Daniels, and then all of a sudden Joe fires back and says, well, Blake, let's do an Auburn deep dive here. Well, here we go. Auburn, new head coach Alex Golish, bringing over God knows how many players over from South Florida, losing players like Cam Coleman, keeping guys like Durkin, keeping guys like Debo Atkins. Joe, when you look at the Auburn Tigers in 2026, you see what?
Blake, I was really ready to be super bullish here for Auburn.
I swear to God, I knew you were going to do this. I wrote this down. I said, Joe's going to come out saying, I really like them to start, but then I started digging, and all of a sudden I index.
Well, that's
Joe DeLeon special.
All right, let's start this conversation with this. Blake, I always bring up the most important talking point with these previews is how many returning starters do you have? Mm-hmm. How many guys are you bringing back from a year ago? I think that the most important reason for that is championship expectations, but we're kind of moving off the tier of teams that can win a national championship. We've got a couple more teams that we're going to get to that fit that. Now we're in the tier of who can win games and who can be scrappy. You don't necessarily need to bring back 10 starters to accomplish that, but you need more than three. Auburn has three players coming back from last year. Now, two of those players, I broke down their film today as I started looking ahead to the 2027 NFL draft and started my notes today. Jeremiah Cobb, Xavier Atkins. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys, I think, can be really impactful players. I think that Jeremiah Cobb can be a top five running back in the SEC this year. I think that Xavier Atkins will finish the year as the best linebacker in the SEC. He's really freaking good. He's a little small, but he is really freaking good. But Blake, I have zero idea what to expect from this roster across the board. I think that it really helps that you have DJ Durkin returning, and he was able to keep some of these youngsters in the building that were some of the higher graded recruits that Freeze had recruited, and Durkin's going to continue to get to work with them defensively. But I feel like unless there is some sort of Golish magic that Cignetti was able to have in year one, with his whole roster coming over from USF, a lot of players coming over from USF, then this is going to be a bit of a bumpy ride. We'll talk about the schedule in a little bit, but there are a lot of new faces on this roster. I will add this before I throw back to you. There are three players that I'm intrigued to see what they can do for this team, and I think that they could be really impactful. Deshaun Womack, the edge rusher. Wonder if his talent can be tapped into.
By the way, guess where Deshaun Womack, YouTube channel he committed on when he was coming out of high school?
Oh, where was that? Was that AYS?
It was AYS, yes.
He's a gifted player, but hasn't really met expectation just yet.
Agreed.
I think Bryson Washington from Baylor is super underrated and is going to add to what could be a really dynamic rushing attack where you've got two really good running backs and they're starting quarterback. I was ready to be excited, Blake, about Byron Brown, considering the fact that this past year he threw for 3,000 yards. He rushed for 1,000. He had 14 rushing touchdowns, 28 passing touchdowns, only 7 interceptions, completed 66% of his passes. But then I saw him toss that hoagie over the middle of the field, man, that he threw in the spring game. And I did a whole video on Byron Brown, Blake, on the A to Z College Football Channel, where I was like, I think that this kid is going to really light the SEC on fire. I think that he could be the dude. We saw him do it against Florida last year. could shock everybody because he's such a good athlete. But holy crap, that throw that he had in the spring game is making me start to question. You know, though, I don't know. I need everybody to look at the one that I'm talking about. He launched the ball, floated it over the middle of the field, didn't throw it, floated it over the middle of the field to nobody, and it got picked off. I don't know what to expect, I think, is the theme here, Blake. There's promise, but there are a lot of unanswered questions.
I don't know specifically what you want me to expect from a team that has 23 transfers along its offense. I don't know what Brown's going to be able to give you in the SEC week in and week out. However, I do believe that DJ Durkin has a lot of dudes on their defense. You brought up Deshaun Womack. That's not the interior defensive lineman that I think that you need to be talking about that they got out of the portal. I think Bud Mathis is. Walter Mathis. Bud Mathis is going to be a very good player. I agree that Deshaun Womack has to start living up to his ability. But why, in my mind, I looked at all 23 players and their past experience, whether they were at South Florida or coming from somewhere else, whether it's the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 offensive linemen that you brought in. Here's my question, though. As much as I'm going to go in on them defensively and talk about how good I think that they can be, can this offense be better than what they were a year ago? Because if you get some of the same play that you got from this defense again, Joe, they're going to win 8 games. They're going to win 8 games. If you can have that level of production and that high level of production again, this is a dangerous team. It's a very dangerous team. I have absolutely no idea what to expect from them offensively because I don't know where Brown is as a quarterback. You talked about and you called it a hoagie, the hoagie that he threw over the middle of the field. But I also remember him going into a game versus Florida where I think he outperformed some SEC quarterbacks that also went up against Florida. I could pull the stat line, by the way, of Brown versus Florida and Arch versus Florida, and it would floor you. I don't know if one little dumb decision is going to affect me in what he did in a spring game of what I think he can be overall. I don't know what to expect from their wide receiver core. I don't know what to expect from their offensive line. I do know that the last time that Golish was in the SEC, it was when Tennessee was at their heights, though. And I do think that he has a formula. And I do think that he has a plan. But I think that this is going to be a defensive team, bar none. Joe, I had a quote-unquote hot take last night when talking about Auburn. I think Auburn had a – take the statistics out of it. From just a basic eye test for me, I thought that they had a top five defense a season ago. They should have beaten 2 playoff teams. They should have beaten Texas A&M. I think with Ashton Daniels, they do. I also believe that they should have beaten Oklahoma. And if they didn't play Jackson Arnold, I still believe that they would have – and they would have played Brown, they would have won that. The bottom line for me, Joe, is a simple one. I have no real idea of what to expect. Do I think that there are some good players on this Auburn offense? It's specifically at receiver. You bring in Kashawn Singleton. I think he's a good player. But you bring in Nimrod from South Florida. He didn't light the world on fire, okay, at South Florida. Do I expect him to do that in the SEC? You're expecting me for a guy who couldn't do it at South Florida to come into the SEC and do it. Now, Kashawn Singleton did. He had 877 yards last year and 8 touchdowns. Joe, around 18 yards per reception. I do think that he will be an interesting case. But when you look along this entire offense, it's filled with guys from South Florida that Golish brought over. How does South Florida offensively compete in the SEC? Because that's the real question I start asking myself.
I think that one bit with what Auburn can accomplish this year, and I know I'm talking about Byron Brown as a passer, and some of the concerns is he's got a very wonky throwing motion that gets a lot of criticism, got a lot of criticism for
it's
a very weird windup, and when he makes mistakes and he has issues this year, it's going to get continuously brought up. But there is one thing that Byron Brown does really damn well.
He runs that football. Well,
I think that's an understatement. He runs hard as hell. He runs through people. He's 6'3", he's 230. He will run through your chest, and he's a quarterback. There's plays from all of last year against G5 opponents where he is running dudes over. I think that where the path for success for them offensively is that you get things rolling with Cobb. Cobb breaks 1,000 yards. Washington is a guy that is, I mean, if you have a tandem of two guys that can go for 1,000, Washington was a 1,000-yard guy, I believe, 2 years ago and had 700 or so the year prior at Baylor. If you could turn this team into a run-first team and you can do it successfully, there is a path. It was how you were able to beat Florida when you were at USF, with this whole squad was at USF. Is the transfer of USF to Auburn, does a lot of the big-time players coming up, is that squad capable of doing damage here? The offensive line is automatically going to be the big thing, Blake, that I'm just will always give me a ton of hesitation, because if you have a whole new offensive line, completely new offensive line, I don't know what to like. That's always a recipe for struggles.
I don't know what to say, because they also, Joe, have four starting at minimum. They're going to have four starting offensive linemen that are new. Stanton Rammel is one of the guys that they project at left tackle. Well, Joe, he was at Michigan State a year ago. How is that part going to work out? Now, I mean, he was from Alabama. He knows the place. I don't think that matters. You got Jack Lurier. He's from Stanford. Okay, well, how does he translate to the SEC? Joe, those are just a lot of questions. This is what I feel about Auburn. I feel that a lot of people are making projections that the truth of the matter is that they have absolutely no clue. There is zero clue coming out of the spring game, and even coming in now, that you should look at this and say, I have no idea. Can I tell you what this feels like to me? Feels like Brian Kelly year one at LSU without Jaden Daniels. Because when Brian Kelly walked in, which, by the way, they didn't retain a defensive coordinator. They didn't have the defense in place. Brian Kelly had 30 scholarship players and had to go get 65 more. Joe, you had no clue. And by the way, two true freshmen started along the offensive line that year.
Well, they ended up being pretty damn good.
They wind up being pretty damn good, but those were top 50 players. You don't have top 50 players along your offensive line. I mean, the guys that they got from lower levels at receiver, they didn't pan out. Who panned out? The two dudes that were high recruits and Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers, were they okay? So the only players that retained were the guy that did good was the players that you got from P4 conferences and guys that had played at that high of a level. So, again, I'm not saying it can't work. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that it can't work. I just have no idea what you want me to say about them offensively, because I don't think any of us know. Now, hold on. Pump the brakes. Okay. Defensively, I think take the statistics out of it. I think they're built to be another top 10 defense.
My only pause with that, though, is you're bringing back two guys that played last year. Now, I think that Xavier Atkins, like, having a really good Will backer, like Xavier Atkins, is fast as he is. Like, I think that that's great for you, but what is this unit going to look like?
Well, they brought in Nate Johnson. They brought in Bud Mathis. They brought in Sigler. You bring back Debo. Melendez is there. I mean, I still think that they have some really good players. Maybe I'm just overhyping them because of how good they were. Maybe that's what I'm doing. But I Joe, for the life of me, I can't look at them and give you a God's honest truth. Because I think that of all the teams, like for let's walk through this. You kind of feel like you have somewhat of an idea of what, not really, but you have more of an idea of what you feel like that you're getting from Lane Kiffin versus Golish. Is that fair? Because even though the entire defense was retained, you still got a lot of players that played in the SEC that are on that team. You still have three offensive linemen that were retained. You have a freak tight end in Tre'Davious Green that was retained. You have Harlan Berry and Caden Durham that was retained. You went out and got Dylan Jones, but you added Jordan Seaton. You added Winnie Watkins. So I feel like I know a little bit more. Well, Blake, you cover them. But even the generalized national consensus would tell you that they feel like that they know more about it because you have an entire defensive line return, or I say entire defensive line, but you have a built-in defensive line that's returning. You got the two top interior defensive tackles. You got T.J. Dottery that led the SEC in tackles along with Whit Weeks. And you have the number one corner in two classes ago that's out there in D.J. Pickett. When I look at Auburn, however, I look at them and say, Joe, I just don't know if I can put my thumb on what it is that they can be.
Well, I think that the one bit that we can lean into is what I brought earlier to the table was them being a really impactful rushing team. But I think to this point,
Washington and Cobb can be dangerous. I agree.
Yeah,
what's the offensive line, though? But
you're right. To this point, though, if you pay attention to all of the other previews that we do, when you have an understanding of proven players who have done big things, whether they were big name transfers who did great things at the previous schools, or you have returning starters, it's easier to define expectations. When you have three returning starters, this is the first team that we've talked about that has had a total this low. That's why the conversation we're having right now is going this way, because we have zero idea. Most of these guys that they brought in are not generally nationally known. One of the pieces of negative feedback that we sometimes get from listeners is like, oh, you're missing X, Y, and Z detail. This is from the national perspective. So from the national perspective, we only have the capability to know X amount of players after watching so much film of who are the top guys in college football. The guys who aren't on that radar and who aren't in the scope of national expectations, like it's hard for us to project what a general group of a lot of new faces are going to be able to accomplish. I think that it does help that many of the new transfers that are coming in, you only are at the current moment on our lads, they only have three projected guys that are coming in that are supposed to be taking over. But I just think that with a lot of turnover, naturally there is a huge potential for volatility of outcomes. I feel like I had a better time defining what Florida could be, because at least with Florida, we had seen Tremell Jones throw last season. We know that Jaden Baugh is an elite running back, could be a first-round pick. We saw the receivers. We saw some of the defensive players. We saw them. The same can't really be said for Auburn.
That's fair. That is very fair. Do you want to run through their schedule really quickly?
Yeah, I didn't bucket things like I did previously. I'm just going to read through it, and I'm going to tell you which games I think that are guaranteed losses. They get Baylor neutral site to start this season, Southern Miss, Florida, Vanderbilt, at Tennessee. That to me is a guaranteed loss. You're going on the road at Tennessee. At Georgia, that's not a game that you're going to win. LSU at home, you're probably not beating LSU. At Ole Miss, mostly you're definitely not beating LSU. At Ole Miss on the road, I don't think that they're winning that game. Arkansas, at Mississippi State, Samford, and they're not beating Bama on the road in Golish's first year. So I just counted 5 games that they're probably not going to win. I see a 7-4 ceiling.
You mean 8-4 or 7-5?
Sorry, 7-5 ceiling.
So you don't think they can beat Florida. You don't think that they can beat Tennessee.
No, I didn't say Florida. I said Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, and Bama. I think the rest of them are possible. Because you get Florida at home.
God, they start on the road 4 straight weeks at home. And then they have a bye week going into that the Georgia rivalry.
It's a hard schedule, dude. It's a hard schedule. You have multiple, you have four road stops at top teams in the SEC.
Because you go to Bama, you go to Ole Miss, you got LSU in town, you go to Georgia, you go to Tennessee. Oh, I mean, you know what would be interesting? If they do beat Baylor, they do beat Southern Miss. God, let's just say they do beat Florida. I don't know what Vandy's going to be with Jared Curtis. God forbid, because I don't know if Tennessee is going to be any good. They can't even figure out their quarterback situation themselves. And they got replaced two corners themselves. Who knows? Could you imagine a 5-0 Auburn going into Georgia?
Yeah, but is that plausible?
I don't know if it's plausible, but do we really know everything about Florida? What if Philo can't throw the football in week three? Tennessee, we have no clue what they're doing at quarterback. None. Yeah, but
Tennessee on the road?
Joe, I don't give a shit if the freaking Harlem Globetrotters were at home. If they ain't got a quarterback or a point guard, they ain't winning shit. And let me tell you what I trust more. I trust Brown more than a walk-on kid from Colorado. And if you can't start George McDonald in a – I'm George McDonald. If you can't start McIntyre in a spring game, you're telling me that you don't trust him at all.
I think that the most realistic thing that can happen here is 4-0 and then they lose to Tennessee. I think just that is such a hard road environment.
But hard road environments don't mean I saw LSU had the hardest road environment and Les Miles couldn't find a quarterback and they got their teeth kicked in. They don't have a quarterback. Joe, they won't throw George McIntyre out there to start a goddamn spring game.
I find it hard to believe that a team that is replacing this much is going to be able to survive on the road with a completely new offensive, mostly transfers.
I don't trust Heupel. I'm out on the
Heupel. This is a 6-6 season, I think. I think Golish is good enough of a coach to make him 6-6.
I don't disagree with you there. All right. Speaking of Tennessee, Jeremy Pruitt is back in the news, Joe. He won an injunction in December. I don't know what to make of Jeremy Pruitt, but he's trying to get back in coaching, and he's not really been able to because of the court case that he won that basically states that it doesn't give a lot of clarity if he can be hired versus the NCAA appeal process. Joe, the man suffered enough. He needs to coach. Before we get out of here, I mean, this is getting a little bit absurd. Can I tell you what it feels like to me, though? It feels like to me that Jeremy Pruitt's being told by people that they would want him to coach their team. However, they're finding this little legal dark cloud over him, and they're saying, sorry, bud, we want to, but we can't. And I think that if teams really wanted to push the envelope, they can. You know how I know? Because you're suing the NCAA every single time. And you're suing them in an open court to get what you need to be done for players, and all of a sudden you can't do it for a coach, or you can't get relative things here. I think that nobody really wants to hire Jeremy Pruitt, and they're making this as an excuse, and I think that they're setting this up for another lawsuit to get money for Jeremy Pruitt. That's what I think.
Well, so part of the issue here is that the NCAA, as much as we want Pruitt to be able to go back to coaching, because what he did is not really that inappropriate in the current era. He got caught. He got popped before NIL became a thing.
Cash in McDonald's bags, baby. But
the crazy thing is the amounts that he was projected to have been giving players is so much lower than the money that is being thrown around for these guys with these NIL deals. That's the craziest part about all this, and he deserves to get back on the field. I just find it hard to believe that he'll actually be able to get this to come to fruition, because the NCAA is trying to look tough and strong at the current moment. They're trying to look tough and strong against tampering. They're trying to look tough and strong against inducements. They can't backtrack on this because he was straight up and trying to induce to convince players to come play purely by just offering him money. There was no NIL at the time, sadly. I wish he could get back on the field because he's a brilliant defensive coach. I don't know if he's a head coach, but whoever ends up getting to be able to hire him in a couple of years, we're going to be talking about Jeremy Pruitt's where? Why does this one random team have a really good defense at the current moment? That's probably going to happen.
I feel like two things are true. I think teams want to hire him. I think they're using this as reasons not to. I really do. And I think all of this is coming up for a lawsuit that he can sue the NCAA and say, I can't work because of you. That's what I think. It's 100% what I think. Now, the man did his time.
Yeah.
The man has done his time. It's time to allow him to come back into coaching. Like, this is absurd. He is, to your point, he is a great defensive mind, and I don't know why. Joe, think about this. This is where I go at this. This is what makes it so dumb and egregious. Will Wade went back to LSU. Bobby Petrino went back to Arkansas. Rick Pitino's still coaching. Jeremy,
all these guys.
Jeremy Pruitt's the one that we're the one that we're hanging our hat on. I mean, I always go to the Rick Pitino thing for what it's worth. You know why? The man got caught with cocaine and strippers in a dorm room, and he's coaching at a Catholic school.
It's a very good point.
Huh?
It's a very good point. The only thing I will say, though, is that why hasn't Pruitt tried to coach the NFL?
That's a really good point. I don't think his personality fits. I don't. And I don't think his personality fits within today's college football. I mean, they call him Skull Can for a reason. They call him Skull Can for a reason, because even though his khakis have Skull Can wrappers attached to it, the man has served his time. But I just don't understand why we fight some of the battles that we do fight versus the ones that we don't. Again, I don't get how Bobby Petrino can be back at Arkansas and how Rick Pitino, man, we're really making Italians look bad on this episode.
I know, but
regardless of that, I don't understand how those situations can happen. And a man gives cash to kids to come play at a school, and that's the thing that that's the ultimate sin. Because having cocaine and strippers in a dorm room for recruits wasn't an ultimate sin at all. I mean,
no. Like, seriously, it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up, but the NCAA is not going to relent when it comes to any of this stuff, so we're just kind of living the in man, this reality. Coach, where he's,
I'd hire him today. Now, I don't know if I'd hire him in DC. I would hire him as a consultant to see how it goes.
It's probably his path back.
It is probably his path back. You mean
he'll be on Sark's coaching staff or something like that.
Exactly. You mean to tell me that Kirby or Sark, or I got a better one for you. You ready? Or Kiffin wouldn't do it? Let me throw something your way, because I'm about to say something on AYS in a minute because of the story. You mean to tell me that Kiffin wouldn't push a button to try to make a statement? Because let me tell you what's about to come here. There are teams in the SEC that have inquired about him.
That doesn't surprise me.
It should.
It doesn't surprise me.
It should not surprise you. So I guess we'll see. All right. Any super chats? No, Joe, they hate us again.
Yeah. We'll survive.
See y'all on Sunday. Y'all have a good night. Peace.